agenda, and I, on your behalf, agreed to that, which has created some problems because now the AG's office can't be here today, because they're planning to be here tomorrow. So it creates some problems for us in the sense that it's not exactly what I had in mind to try and get a engagement between us as a department, the Treasury, the committee, to try and engage around the issue of the strategic plan, how it's drafted, and the how performance targets are reached. So it's not going to be ideal, but that is what it is. You also recall that our agreement as a committee was that the department will give the input on behalf of the department plus the entities. And the reason for that is very simple, is that we want the department itself to take ownership of what's happening in the entities. And for them to do that, they need to understand everything that's going to happen in those entities, the reason why they're doing it, and then be able to present it to us. I don't mind if they have the entities here to answer particular questions and so on. That's not the problem. The issue is to try and get a holistic picture, and I want that to emanate from the department so I can see whether the department and the committee can see whether the department actually understands the full extent of this mandate, even when it is being performed through other entities. And that's the whole idea when we discuss this issue. So that we cannot get fragmented inputs here from different entities, each one comes and puts their point of view. What we want to do is get that holistic. As I say, when it comes to answering the questions, clearly some of the entities may know better why certain things are done. Well, that's fine. We can do that. But that's how we do this. Now, the other point is that this is a new issue. And from your leadership in the department, I've understood that they really welcomed this, and they wanted this to happen before they handed this strategic plan. And the reason for that is that when we have to assess the performance of the department, particularly at the end of the year, when we do those, what's that stuff called? B-triple-R. We have to assess the performance of the department. But we do it in a total vacuum. Because a strategic plan is handed in here, we have no understanding of the thinking behind the strategic plan, why it is there, why certain targets are there, why is there 5 workshops, not 6 workshops, why are we only going to reach 90% employment vacancy fillings and not 100%. I mean, those issues, we have to say something that we've not been part of and so on. Now, I want to make this clear, to dispel the notion. The prerogative of drafting a strategic plan is that of the department. So we're not in any way suggesting that we want to usurp anything more. We only want to understand your thinking behind it. Even if we think your thinking is wrong, it's got nothing to do with you can go walk out of here and say so what. So this is a first experiment. I don't think it's ever been done in Parliament. We're trying to get some understanding that if we are to evaluate you, that we do it properly because we understand what your thinking is about. Otherwise, it's going to be our thinking of your performance without understanding what it is. So that's what this is. It's a first attempt to deal with this matter and get some way of getting behind your thinking and so on. And hopefully in the process to enhance our work of evaluating you later in the year. And I hope in the process that you get some value out of it, but that's not up to me, it would be up to yourselves to decide that. and so on. So I want to just make that clear. I want to be very clear on this, that this is not an attempt by this committee to in any way intrude upon the prerogative you have. This is an attempt to try and do our work better, to try and enhance things, to understand things better, so that when we actually have to do the job we have to do, and that is evaluate you, particularly at the end of the year with the performance targets, that there's some understanding of where we are. So I don't want there to be misunderstandings about it. And secondly, the reason I want the department to do it is I want to force the department. You may have been it already, but I wanted to force the department that when they come to Parliament at the beginning of the year, that they've taken the time to engage with their entities and fully understand what it is their entities are trying to do through their staff plans. And whether it fits into, of course, into the departments. Now, I know you've got engagements all year long and so on, and those things are happening, but this is the time when we want to see the picture at all. Okay? And the reason of the thinking at all. I mean, why are we this year going to give more money to Sandparks and less to Sandy? So why won't we ask 50% increase for Sandy and 50% for? Well, because there's certain thinking, certain priorities, and so we've asked for 10% for Sandy and, you know, 20% for Sandparks. Those priorities are, what's the thinking behind that? Because the problem is when we look at the entities on their own, then of course we hear what the entities think, but we don't hear what the departments thinking and so on. So I don't know if any of the members want to add any to that thinking, but that is where I thought we were with these issues, and that's what we were trying to attend to. Anyone want to add something, subtract something, disagree, agree, all happy? Okay. Did you see anything from yours before you start?
No, Chair, we have the understanding and we appreciate the fact that the committee is taking time to at least interact with us on the strategic plans before we table, because there is no point in getting news of Parliament after we have actually tabled the strategic plan. So I think that, and that the Minister was also appreciating, that's why she said she would like to be available for the meeting.
She tells me now that the minister has apologized for being late. She just met another meeting, but she intends to join us for class.
Okay.
Now, what document? We have called something called the overview of the DEA strategic and annual performance plan, and then we have an approach for development of strategic and annual.
One is the approach, Chair. So, because that's how we then prepare the first plans. And also the entities copies are also available in terms of what they are covering in the first plan. Separate presentations, but it will be done jointly when we present.
Yeah, you've not done it like I wanted to, okay. All right, so let's see. Let's try this experiment. I suppose we all knew it, so we must mark, be patient with each other.
Okay. I'm going to request info to take us through the framework that was used to prepare the strategy.
Thank you, DG, and morning, Chair, honorable members. I will take us through a presentation that basically explains the approach in developing the strategic plans and annual performance plans for both the department and the entities, because in developing the plans, we provide the guidelines and for the entities, and they do submit their plans to the department for us to check, firstly, whether they comply with the guidelines, and to check the content in there to ensure that they are responding to their mandate and to the delivery of what they should answer to. So the presentation looks briefly at what is the basis for the plan, the guidelines or the regulations that we have, what is the planning framework that we have, the process that we follow, and will place emphasis on the criteria and rationale for the performance measures that we have, basically the indicators and the targets That's what we'll basically be looking at. In developing plans, we are mainly guided by Treasury guidelines, which stipulate that our flat plans should cover a period of 5 years, that we should not have a lot of changes throughout the years, but changes should be limited to any revisions that are related to policy shifts or changes in the service delivery environment, and we should always link with the medium-term strategic framework and consider the performance agreements between the President and the Ministers to ensure that there is alignment, that the threat plan should closely be aligned and talk to our annual performance plan. In terms of the process itself, our starting point is always to ensure that we check and define our vision and our mission, and this is followed by an environmental scan to assess current service delivery challenges and also what other problems are in the delivery environment, what is the baseline data that we have for development of performance measures. We then formulate our strategic goals, objectives, measures, and also look at the resource allocation that we have. And once we have done that, we then look at an implementation plan, which is basically our annual performance plans and the performance agreements of the officials in the department. The plan itself, as I've indicated, will be guided by the mandate that we have. And looking at that mandate, we then need to define what the desired impact would be for us to be able to meet that mandate. What would be the results that will contribute to that impact, and which would be the output that we need to define, and how will we then assess performance, which what will be the indicator of performance, how will we know that we are on track or we are not achieving, then what is the desired performance level that we have. Once we have set those, we then need to decide on the activities that will enable us to get to those targets that we have. The next slide just was just an illustration of how we would have followed that framework. Chair, I'm not going to go through the slide in detail. And the next slide as well, just to show that we are aligned, it illustrates that we are aligned with the Treasury requirements because all our plans are 5 year plans. And every year when we do the reviews, we don't change drastically the priorities that we have unless there is a major change in the delivery environment that we have. The goals that we develop, we ensure that they are outcome-oriented and they identify clearly the areas of performance that are critical for achievement of our vision and our mission. Our objectives need to be output statements. So we give you what will be the output of all the activities that we do that would lead to that goal that we have. They need to directly contribute towards the goal that we have. And in some cases, we do have multiple objectives that contribute, in most cases, that contribute to one departmental goal. So we have very few goals in the department, but a lot more objectives that contribute to those goals that we have. For each of the objectives that we have, we develop performance measures, which are the indicators and targets that will help us to track the performance in that regard. I'm going to go into now the questions that we start considering in first in defining our objectives. We need to answer the questions around our mandate, we covered our mandate, also reflect on what goals and objectives we must accomplish to fulfill that mandate. Who are our stakeholders? It's another question that we normally ask ourselves. What are their needs and how do we ensure that we meet the needs of our stakeholders? What should we focus on to ensure that we have capacity to deliver and ensure better utilization of our limited resources, because in most cases we do have limited resources. So the targets that we sometimes set are influenced by that, because after looking at what the mandate is, what we should be delivering, what our stakeholders expect of us, the next question is what resources do we have and what can we achieve given those resources at what point. In looking at the indicators themselves, we normally say a lot of work has been done and we do not want to reinvent the wheel. And as I've indicated, our focus doesn't change drastically. So most of the objectives we had are things we've measured before. So we start by collecting existing indicators that we would have had. Look at the reports that we've had, whether the objectives had changed, but we also then start asking questions on whether those indicators that we have chosen are actually the best indicators. Do they give us the best meaning for the objectives? Are we able to assess whether we're actually achieving that objective on the basis of those indicators? And we do raise some new indicators where it is necessary. We then rank our indicators in terms of clarity and simplicity. Are they clear and simple for the next person to understand them? Is the information for this indicator available? And what are we communicating with this indicator, the communication value of that indicator, and the cost benefit value of that? Because some of the indicators that we have in the environment, we'll find that we need to spend a lot of money just to get that information and start looking at the benefit, whether that will help in that regard. And on the basis of those, shall we then select the indicators that we have? With an understanding that indicators for us function as tools that will drive behaviors, because people will respond to what is being inspected, not exactly what, not necessarily what expected of them. So if you know I'm going to be measured on this, they will then work on that. So we try and look at indicators that will drive certain behaviors and give people direction in terms of what they need to assess. Our indicators also need to test organizational progress in achieving strategic goals, if, as I have said, and we look at the one that best communicates the meaning of the objective. All the indicators we set are a basis for target setting. So we start thinking about the target given at that point to say, if we select this indicator, what type of targets would be linked to this? Is it information that we can get? Will it have an impact as well? Will it answer to the needs of our stakeholders? What are we, as I said, in terms of the strategic communication, we start asking ourselves questions on what we are committing to. Is it something that's within our mandate to ensure that we don't have an indicator that will be outside of our mandate, but we focus on indicators that are within our mandate? Is it something that we can use repeatedly? Are they repeatable and reliable? Because we need these indicators to be able to see trends as well. Not an indicator that can be used today and then the next day you use a totally different indicator, because that doesn't help us to track the trends that we have. The other big question is, how frequently can we update the indicators that we have? Is it something that we can only update once every 5 years? If we find an indicator that is like that, then we will need to find another indicator. While we will keep the long-term one, it means we need to set shorter-term milestones, because we can't wait for the five-year period to know whether we're making a difference or not. So we then set mid-term indicators or interim indicators if there's a need to do that. And our indicators have take a lot of forms. It can be percentages, numbers, and that.
When we do this, do we have a long-term target we want to achieve, and we break it up, and where would those targets be? And do we have a document like that? I mean, let's say in 10 years we want to be here with X. Now, the resources are finite, so you may be able to achieve it in 2 years, but you have the money and you have the capacity. Right? So, do we have a plan, a document somewhere, a white paper that actually says these are the things we want to achieve, and then let's look at Reiner's that we want to have 10 healthy Reiner's in the year 2020. Yes. We're doing it by allowing a lot of poaching in the meantime so we can get 20 Reiner's in that time. Now, what you're telling me is your technicalities, but I'm trying to see the bigger picture of how we're looking at this. But if we don't set kind of parameters where we want to be with how many jobs we want to create, we want to be with the conservation, we want to be with biodiversity, we don't have the overall, at least, milestones, then it's very, very difficult to see how, to what extent. And the other thing I want you to also address as you go along Unfortunately, Trevor can't be here today as well because of the same. But so I would ask him this question. But to what extent do we engage Treasury just on the ultimate budget we provide, or do we engage them on the strategic plan? Because the strategic plan can be better if there's more budget. So I'm trying to look at to what extent does Treasury engage with us as a department in deciding our overall objectives, our shorter term objectives, and then what indicators. Just try and work that into it as well as you go along, okay? Yes. Maybe further along, but just work that in as well. Nadine?
I've got maybe in trying to respond to your thoughts and comments. We have very areas where we put together the information about long-term targets and goals. And it differs from sub-sector to sub-sector. For instance, if I were to give you an example, in the area of protected species or protected areas, we have what we call a protected area strategy. And that strategy is a multiple, beyond 10 years, 20 year kind of a vision for the sector. Or for the sub-sector, and we can then also link, it is also informed by the work of the National Biodiversity Assessment, which indicated which biomes and which species areas are we conserving at best, or which are underrepresented in our protected area scheme. So basically that strategy then says, this is how we are going to then fill those gaps. So it will be different therefore for each of the areas, and the documents are different, like we had last week, the State of the Oceans report. In essence, that report then gives us the long vision in terms of how we could conserve the ocean environment.
We don't have it all together in one place. We have to pull this together for our own, just to help us.
Yeah, it's not in one. We have a sector plan that outlines all of these areas, which is what we have tabled to Treasury. And that was supposed to inform what we call the budget structure process and aligning long-term budgeting to that. However, the way things work right now is that Treasury is giving allocations on a 3-year basis, for instance. So not even a 5-year strategy is fully funded per se until we then get confirmations on an annual basis from Treasury. So we do have engagement with Treasury just in helping them understand our areas of pressure and where we want to be, both in terms of meeting our international obligations. For instance, in the area of protected areas, our target is 10%, 12.5, but we are sitting at around 9 point something at this point in time. So we are unable to buy as much land because part of the land that is would be lucrative for protection is also in the private hands, not only in the public hands. And even transferring land between different departments is another process that we have to follow.
Now I'm a diagram person, you know them. I believe you must work in a way you want to manage things properly. Work in a way that, I mean, people can see what needs to be done and you make sure and regularly see how far we are. And I think you must give some thought to this idea of trying to capture where our overall goals we want to be and trying to do it in one place now. I think it's even better to do it in a diagram form. And actually trace, let's say in the last 5-10 years, whenever we started with the strat plans, and on that projection, you know, where we are during those things. Because I think what we'll start doing is we start doing it like that. We'll be start engaging each other more on the priorities we're having, on whether we, how we engage Treasury, because we can all see that if these are the goals in rhinos and conservation and da 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 da, and we're here, And even if we were to get the money we want up to there, we're only going to reach three quarters. Then we know that there's some drastic change, and we need to engage with Treasury, with the AG's office and so on, to start, you know, seeing that that is where we're... So I don't need an answer now, but I think we must give some thought of it, that we get the big picture, and that's why I want you to present in the way we're presenting now, so that we get the bigger picture, and then we find a tool by which we all can say, okay, this is where we're going with this, and this is where we are at certain times. And therefore, if we go at this pace and at this budget and at these performance targets, we can only land here. So then either we have to revise our end target, or we need to engage to try and make sure that there is the capacity then to reach that, and we're not forced. So give some thought to that idea of how we do that. And what tool we'll use to do that. And then the other issue about the Treasury. What do they engage with, you guys?
We start engaging with Treasury with a first draft. When we start drafting our plans in August.
The strategic plan.
Submit a draft to Treasury and Presidency. Then we get feedback, then we do the second draft and we finalize after that. So there is that engagement in between the finalizing of finances.
Okay.
I think another strategic link is the direct correlation between the strategic plan and what gets published in the budget, both the Estimate of National Expenditure. We use not all of the indicators get reflected in the EME, but key indicators and targets that are in the strategic plan is also reflected in the EME to allocate how the resources, or to set out how the resources then estimate of national expenditure. It's basically where the budget vote, where the vote on the budget is being reflected in, so that being
linked. They take your strategic plan and they capture that which is agreed to, and they budget it for, they capture in the EME.
At a very strategic high level. So it's not
all the strategic
indicators.
Okay. See, this is why we need to do this, that members of Parliament can understand more clearly the linkages and how these things work.
Chair, I think the last slide covers what you've just discussed now, because it looks at now how we set the targets, and we're saying while we look at the current baseline, we take into account the government priorities, other sector targets, as DG was saying, the long-term targets that we have. We start reflecting on compliance issues as well. Are we compliant with
the development goals? Are they part of
the millennium? Yes.
Yes, they are.
The main documents that we look at, Chair, will be the outcomes document, outcome 10 specifically, and the other outcomes that we contribute to, outcome 7 and 4, the Millennium Development Goals. We're starting to look now closely this year. We looked at the National Development Plan to see what implications it has for the department. Then we look at, as I said, what other international obligations do we have, what compliance issues do we have in terms of standards or timeframes that are setting the different policies as well that we have.
So you take the National Development Plan, you make a full analysis of it, and then you try and compare to the strat plan to see whether you achieve in there.
Yes.
And if you don't, then you add to the strat
plan. Yes.
And you say you've done that.
We have done that.
I think particularly Program 4, which is Judy, when she presents on how we have then integrated the specific chapter that talks to sustainability and low carbon growth is factored in then mainly in that program.
I think when we actually have the strat plan in Parliament, I think part of your input to us actually should highlight those important, like the national plan. Say, well, this is what you've analyzed, this is what you see that you should be complying with, and it is here in the indicators, or it's half there, and we've added this, so that we have an idea of how you've done that. Same with the Millennium Development Goals. Now, there is something, of course, that you've never done and ignored us over a long period of time. You will remember that at one of the first meetings we said that all international instruments that create obligations upon us. So we always deal with the Millennium Development Goals. But I understand in the environment there's many more than just that. And what we have asked for on previous occasions is to analyze that in the different, those different instruments and then show us where it is that it's in our strat plan doing whatever. So I'm going to give you that job again now, so that when you come with your strat plan and the budget, make a separate input on those ones, that in our strat plan this is how, and in the budget this is how we've dealt with that, the national plan, the diversification, the da-da-da, and the this and the that, all those, so that we actually start at, in our work, we make sure that we can actually see. And, you know, it also empowers us. You know, I mean, you know, when foreigners come here as an MP, it's very difficult when they ask you things about the executive. I mean, they ask you, like, you know, what are you doing about the treaty on this and this and that? Well, you know, I'm sure we do this. But I'm buggered if I know what it is. I mean, you know, no one has ever told me, so I don't really know. But so that is what I'm trying to integrate in our work, so that we have a more, you know, fuller picture, and we are empowered as members to be able to do that. So we don't need to do it now, of course. I'm asking that when we actually have the strat plan and that then you, in your inputs, make sure that those sections you show us how they've been included and so on. Okay. All right. Go ahead.
The approach that we use in developing the plans, we do have a detailed presentation in terms of the specific.
I suppose the one thing about this is probably a weakness, and I suppose a strength as well, is the problem with this is you, at some stage, 5 years ago, you agree on a strat plan, and then you get a bit locked into it. I mean, it's because everyone says you mustn't change it much. So it then becomes, it's like when you want to move a tanker, you know, these big oil tankers, when they're on the sea, you know, and they're moving south and now want to move southwest. I mean, they don't just turn the steering wheel and then suddenly they go southwest. I mean, they talk in the last group, 5 degrees southwest. And then 2 days later, you see, oh, now we're going southwest. It takes a very long time for it to move and to change and so on. And I suppose it's also an advantage, because you clearly want to create certainty in government, but in another way you obviously get caught at a certain stage, your budget is this size, and you get caught into a particular paradigm. It's very difficult to. So that is something we need to engage a bit more on members. Not much we can do, because we don't decide that, but the reality is that is what it is. Obviously you get locked into things to some extent. Alright, what is the next... sorry, before we go further, any questions, any inputs at this stage? Ms. Winger?
Thank you, Chair. The target setting and order is wonderful, because it outlines exactly as to which direction it goes. The strategic plan, which is a short, long, medium and long-term plan set out there, and something unforeseen happens, we have to actually readjust. The medium-term or the long-term suddenly becomes a short-term because of a crisis that we had. Is there a flexibility within Treasury and the Department to readjust funding in order to be able to carry about that urgency? Or is there a rigid mechanism that has to be followed? And then what is the point?
That's a very good question. I mean, the example for me always is the municipalities. Not so much with this department, but also too with this department, but you know, particularly with water, and to the extent that they deal with environment, is that if there's a level of government that doesn't have the capacity and other departments starts helping with that, I mean, it's a new function, it's new money and so on, to what extent does that flexibility allow? I think that's an excellent question. Anyone want to respond?
in terms of the formal process, we, of course, there is the provisions in terms of emergency funding, which is a different approach, a given follow-up approach set up for that. But we do have an ability to mid-year, there is an adjustment estimation process where you can table to Treasury unforeseen matters that have emerged, etc., and request additional money, or obtain approval to reprioritize what has already been given to you. At that same time, we can then also once a year amend our APP and formally have an amended annual performance plan approved, for which we then would need to be accountable for. So formally there is the once-off approach which is standard, but the accounting officer can also, outside of cycle, if it is justified, approach the Treasury with something that needs to be amended.
So, the long and the short is that if you can get the buy-in of Treasury on it, then there is flexibility. But I mean, there is that flexibility, I mean, or some flexibility, if you can get Treasury to buy in. You see why I like having them in the air, in my pocket, so they can, meetings don't be changed. All right. That is the approach, the broad approach to it, and I hope members have some.
Chairperson, it's a comment.
Sure.
I'm happy just to hear from dear them mentioning the MDGs. Because we are now approaching 2050. All departments, like the questions that were asked, participate. Because when you go back and analyze the 8 MDGs, everybody has to be involved. And DG, it was good that one day we got a good presentation or a report from Doha about the MDGs. I can't say Gia hasn't reported or presented, because at times I'm not with you. So that's another, but I'm just happy to hear today that there's something about the MDGs from here.
The Dua has been very good with it. Dua has been very good with it. Dia has tried. Next input?
Okay, Chair and Honourable Members, there is another presentation on, which is an overview on the Department Strategic Plan and the Annual Performance Plan. You have the presentation printed. It's a next presentation on the document that was circulated.
The overview one?
Yes.
Okay. Right, let's go.
Okay, whilst the technology is failing, just to introduce the DDGs are going to come in and present the details on each of the programs. We currently have from Treasury received approval for the 7 programs. Program 1 being the administration program, and that is more focusing on administration and effective support, including cooperative governments and our oversight functions over the public entities, as well as the work that relates to our international relations and multilateral environmental agreements.
program two, so we will get a presentation from the COO in that regard to then share with the members how we have refined the measures and targets for program one. Program two, it's legal authorizations and compliance. Again, this is the program where our work on promoting and enabling the compliance with the legal legislative mandate of the department, in particular most of the pieces of legislation that are passed through by Parliament, including the authorization system or the EIA authorization system that the department is responsible for. Oceans and Coast is program three. Again, this is an area of work where we are seeking to provide leadership on ocean conservation. So the second program, Ishan is going to present the details on measures, and then the oceans and coast, Dr. Maeki, so will take us through the measures. Then program four, which is climate change and air quality management, which fosters the work of the department in terms of improving the air and atmospheric quality, including leadership and support in respect of reporting efficient and effective international and national responses to climate change. And that program is going to present and also touch on the activities and the measures that the South African Weather Services is responsible for. So she will then take us through that presentation and talk through the measures and targets that have been put together by the Executive of Weather Services and the board. Biodiversity and Conservation is program five. Again, this is a program that ensures regulation and management of biodiversity and health and heritage in the country. And the sub programs or the key public entities that fall under that is the Biodiversity Institute, and Fundi will then talk to those aspects, Fen Park and Isimangani. So we'll help Fundi with Lisa and myself when he then talks to the details on the measures and outputs of the public entities that are in the area of biodiversity and conservation. And program six is environmental programs, which is a program that is where we make our interventions as a department in terms of job creation and green economy programs in the environmental sector. Program seven, I don't think that's a question. Program seven, chemicals. Okay, chemicals and waste. Input will be done by Obert, which would talk about the measures that we have put forward for the changing of the strategic plan in this cycle. Now, the next slide just shows in one slide one, the vision of the department. Again, when you prepare strategic plan, one of the things that we do is to revisit the vision, and we are confirming the old vision. We have not proposed any changes, and our vision is a prosperous and equitable society living in harmony with our natural resources. That is our high-level goal. And the mission, which is what then, how do we then get to the vision? We seek to provide leadership in the environmental management, conservation and protection towards sustainability for the benefit of South Africans and the global community. Again, this is a mission that we refined last time when we presented to Parliament, and we have not proposed any changes to it currently. Then we have the
leadership, obviously, is the most important. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you do more than leadership, don't you? I mean, there are certain projects and programs that the AI itself performs. I mean, I can have, you know, leadership in the sense that you create white papers and da-da-da, and you draft legislation, you set the framework, and the minister obviously sets the tone, and the leadership, you and the DG, that, backing that. So that leadership, I perfectly understand, is probably the most important. But surely our mission is also to create certain, or deliver certain services properly. Because, I mean, there's some things we do. We monitor, we do EIAs, we actually physically do that. We don't just divide by the leadership of the framework for others to do it. So it just struck me a little bit as that you've got the most important there, but I was wondering if it's just a bit narrow.
Always a difficult exercise, Chair, to put all the words that will have a meaning to what you're trying to say in your mission. Yes, the doing, because we are covering in the management, when you say environmental management, because in essence we are then doing, making decisions and executing in that regard, and also in conservation. So not unless you were proposing or suggesting that we say we provide leadership and implement, or yeah, but something, that's something we can think about again.
Think about it. For me, if I read it like that, I don't read the specifics you read into it. I mean, I just, actually the leadership part, as leadership as to the management, not actually. But it's not important, just think about it.
Okay, thank you, Chair. And then we then outline what we have as the strategic objectives or the goals. And within that, I mean, we have said we have a passion in our department for the environment that is enabled to deliver in our mandate. One, in terms of biodiversity that should be conserved and protected, the oceans and coastal environment protected and conserved, and we seek to have a society that has less waste, and if it's there, it must be better managed, and we are striving to make sure that we reach a point where our environment continues to be clean as we are mandated by the Constitution, and should provide healthy air, and so that people do not then suffer from the consequences of poor management of chemicals that find themselves in the air medium, nor even land and other areas. So all of those actions are also
seeking to enhance. According to you guys, where does climate change fit in? All of them? Or one of them?
It fits in clean air, in cleaner and healthy air, and also in enhanced environmental contribution towards national sustainable development.
And the earth?
And also even in oceans.
And the earth?
And the earth, yes, aspects of.
You've got the sea and you've got the air.
Yeah.
And you've got the brown soil.
You do have the land and the biodiversity, yes. And it also is also in the area of waste. So you have brown and sustainable development, and you should also have it in the other standalone programs.
Okay.
We could change and make the department to focus on sustainable development and cover the green and the brown.
The other way I ask this question is that when you listen to Mark Sully, Professor Sully, who I have tremendous respect for, the one problem he has very strongly is that he reckons that government has no policies in place actually to deal with the kind of our soils are getting worse and worse and worse and worse. You know, you get things like the agriculture and so on, but there's no overall Now, I don't know how true that is, but it struck me, this is one of the things he observed during his input to us when we were dealing with the climate change stuff. It's one area he feels we are very, very weak on as a country. And so when I look at this and I see the sea and I see the air, I don't see the earth particularly. It reminds me of his worry that we don't deal with this thing properly in our governments. I can't think that clearly what he was worried about, but it does, it does worry me to see that we don't have it as a specific, I suppose, objective there.
Chair, in the Waste Act that was passed by Parliament, there is a section that talks to contaminated land and how we deal with that in law. But we still have that provision had not come into effect because I recall that there were still issues that we had to work with the private sector. On, because particularly I think the banks had specific risks that they raised with that in terms of land that's already on it. And if you have whatever basis of contamination, how do you then treat that land at the time of transacting? And how far do you go in terms of historical? And it's the same argument that I think Dr. Preston would make on the alien invasive species. And if you find land that's already infested, what is the course of action in that regard? So I think we do have an ability to deal with those within the existing regime, but I think the question is operationalizing some of those aspects of the law.
Just to let an old man sleep more comfortably at night, I think you guys are trying to engage Professor Swimming on this and just see whether it affects our department. Because, you know, it's not the contamination so much, he's talking about, I imagine that is part of it. But it's actually imagine the easy word is sustainability of our land and our earth and to what extent we properly care for that. I think that's probably what he's more dealing with. And to what extent that is or not included under our mandate, okay? So just to make an old man sheet more comfortable.
Certainly. Professor Schoening works for us, for the department chair.
And that's an easy job.
So he continues to give input. In our National Sustainable Development Strategy, that work was actually done by the University of Stellenbosch. Which is important. So I think we can go back to that. And then the other aspect, just again, take to the point about our efforts to ensure the integrity of the environment based on improving compliance with environmental legislation, enhanced activities in terms of international environmental governance, the work of our multilateral environmental agreement as presented chair to the committee last year, I think we definitely feel shown in the strategic plan how much is going to unfold in over the 5-year period, and effective cooperative governance and local government support, especially in the area of waste management and also in the area of air quality management, improved sector education and awareness, improving access to information, ensuring that ecosystem services are restored and maintained, managing impacts of chemicals, strengthening the science program for integrated oceans and coastal management, and our management of knowledge in the sector, our inevitable, or at least preparations towards inevitable climate change impacts, if we are going to be able to make a difference in terms of implementing the white paper, a fair contribution to the global efforts in terms of stabilizing greenhouse gas emissions,
and the concentrations thereof in the atmosphere, protection of the potential, managing the potential negative impacts of all significant developments through various instruments like the EIAs, the environmental management framework or strategic environmental assessment. And all of this, we think we do have a solid base in terms of as an organization that strives to perform, that we will have adequately and appropriately skilled staff, and we will continue to revisit our corporate governance systems and ensure that we perform our work in an efficient and effective manner using information technology and also securing a harmonious and transformative working environment. So basically, again, those are more the aspects of the inward looking approach to our strategy in the sector of managing people and making sure that the people and the staff in the organization believe in improving service standards and make sure that we continue to contribute to socio-economic benefits in the environmental sector that are possible, and both in terms of our engagement with the youth and the most vulnerable, both the people with disabilities and women in our society. So this slide gives them the whole story about what then is the content of the strategic plan that is being presented. And now I hand over to Elisa to take us through program work.
Thank you, Chair. So that very colourful slide basically represents all the strategic objectives. The red, blue and green ones are all indicated in a strategic plan as strategic objectives of the different programs. If we talk about Program 1, administration, it's basically the work of three branches, units that is contained in Program 1, namely the Chief Operating Officer, where we deal with human resource management, IT, facilities management, business performance, risk management, sector coordination. Then we also have the Strategic Environmental Advisory Branch, which is led by ALF, represented today by Zahir, where we deal with the international work, the work that we presented last year in terms of the new approach in terms of environmental intelligence, if you can call it like that, as well as the sustainable development and green economy work that is done there. The last unit is then the finance unit, the CFO, and the units that is reporting to her. Most of the targets in terms of administration comes from legal precepts or guidelines in terms of the public service regulations or the other regulations that guide our work. If you look, for example, at, in terms of the first area, the adequate and appropriately skilled staff, there we have the vacancy rate, which is the vacancy rate described in terms of the PSA of 10%. Percentage implementation of the PMDS, which is the Performance Management and Development System, and that is where we are dealing with the performance agreements and management of individual performance rather than organizational performance. And then the Work Skills Plan, which is the WSP, is where all of the different training, including from training our unskilled workers through the ABET program to our bursary program and everything in between, is contained in this plan, which is then implemented over the year. The next strategic objective deals with a secure, harmonious, transformed and conducive working environment. The target there is described. I'm not going to go through all of them in the interest of time. The question could be asked, why are we only talking about 60% implementation of the security risk assessment recommendation in the current financial year or in the planned financial year? And that is just as a result of when this assessment will be concluded, which is only towards the end of the first quarter, and the implementation will therefore spill over into the next financial year. That's why it is not 100% implementation in the next financial year. If we then go to the next strategic objective, which is equitable and sound corporate governance, there you have, again, mostly in terms of the financial, the requirements that we have in terms of sticking to the governance precepts, and we including there the Public Finance Management Act, the Treasury Regulations, and all these guidelines that is prescribed, and our target remains 100% unqualified audit is one of the targets that are in there. If we then go to improved access to information, now here is partly our communication work, but it also includes issues in terms of access towards FIRE and other processes, and the targets are there informed both in terms of baseline as well as the areas that the department has prioritized in terms of being involved in the process. The statement is featured.
See, here you mentioned that other important one here. Is providing the portfolio committee with information. It should be 100%, and it should be keep it at 100%. At the moment, of course, your target is about 10%. So I think that should be pushed up. That should be pushed up at least to 100%.
We actually have included it later when we get to the service standards. You will see there all requests for information, whether it be a portfolio committee or parliamentary question.
We don't fall under request. Fall under
required.
You have to. That is at the moment at a very low 10%.
And it is also a requirement. If you read, if we get to the service standards on slide 39,
yeah, no, look there. I'll just change it to 100% before we get there.
Very difficult to do. Okay. Then in terms of the, then included in that improved access to information, we also have the publications as well as the usage of
I want this year when you come and deliver your budget and so on, I want a more full input on PAJA and PAIA, on how the department deals with it and to what extent we comply with it. I mean, from the reading I have from the reports that are coming to Parliament of all the departments and so on, it seems woeful what's happening. So I want to see what other departments do, okay? So come and tell us what you've set up, how you deal with it, and then how you've performed on it, okay?
Again, when we get to the indicators on performance, we actually have a target and we've kept that of 100% compliance with PAIA. PAJA, of course, is we need to link it in terms of the legislation and regulations that we have that make specific provisions, but we can report on that as well too. In terms of the next strategic objective, which deals with improved sex education and awareness, here all the work that is dealt with in terms of training across the department is reflected. So not all of that is done through the branches responsible of Program 1. And you will see, for example, there the targets around the training of the environmental management inspectors, or the EMI, as well as the training on environmental impact assessment, which is also included in there. Included in there is also the training of teachers on the curriculum assessment and policy statements, which we have developed. So that is the environmental curriculum statements which was developed by the department, and there we have a collaborative effort, so we pay for only 100, but there's more than 100 that gets trained through the CETA process, and we just a partner into that process. If we then go to the accredited training person days created, that is part of the program managed by Dr. Preston, and relates to the expanded public works program and the money that we get specifically for that purpose, and that is real skilling that we are talking about there. In terms of strategic objective, effective knowledge and information management for the sector, we have a whole lot of information knowledge and information management systems developed and implemented operational.
Now here we're talking about why the range of instruments, like for example strategic environmental assessments, environmental management frameworks, all of those things that provide us with the information base, us the applicants, interested and affected parties, to make informed decisions as well as having more streamlined regulatory and control processes in place. That work is done in strategic environmental advisory services, and if there's questions, I'll ask my colleagues from that branch to respond. It also includes our GIS work, our geographical information system work, and the establishment of a sector-wide enterprise GIS, which we presented also last year to the committee in terms of our approach to spatial information. We then have the reports that the report and evaluation and publications and response options produced, and that deals with a whole range of issues like the state of environment report, the state of oceans report, the evaluation reports in terms of compliance and monitoring in the wide range of work that the department do, where we are responding specifically to impact indicators across the organization. And it's also talking about our scientific publications, specifically in oceans and coasts, but also in other areas where we're talking about peer-reviewed scientific papers being published. If we then get to the next strategic objective, which talks about effective cooperative governance and local government support, we have a local government support strategy that is in draft format currently and will be developed and implemented. And the main focus of this is to coordinate all of the work that we are already doing in the branches, but so that one branch is not in a specific municipality this week and the next branch is there another week, etc., but to coordinate the work that we do in order to maximize the impact and servicing specifically the areas which is implemented by local government. But it's also aiding, for example, the integrated development plans and local spatial development frameworks, where we then have people placed in the district municipalities to make sure that those plans are environmentally informed or informed by environmental standards. And this program supports all of that work. We then also have the enhanced international governance instruments and agreements supported the SA environmental and sustainable development priorities. And there we list all the bilaterals, multilaterals that we are, and plurilaterals that we are involved in, and as well as the input in that, and we try to measure our success there in terms of meeting the objectives that we set in our country position before we go into negotiations, and which we then report on through the section 24, FEMA section 26 reports that is tabled in Parliament annually. We also look here in terms of the sourcing funding from donor funds, and we have a target there, and also the instruments that we use for transfrontier conservation areas. Apology for the acronym there, TFCA is a transfrontier conservation area that has been developed. And then we have the mandatory international and national reports linked to our international obligations. And that in short is the indicators. There's also, as I said, performance indicators or service delivery indicators for Program 1, which is reflected on page on slide 40, and I'll briefly talk again when we get there.
Morning, members and chair. I'm going to be dealing with Program 2, which is the Legal Authorizations, Compliance and Enforcement Unit. Essentially, there's three units that are represented here, but some of the functions are cross-cutting, so some of the work being done by our biodiversity and conservation colleagues are also included under the strategic objective that's going to be dealt with here. What we'd be looking at here is the number of authorizations that we inspect as a department. So these are authorizations that the department monitors on an ongoing basis. We also look at the percentage of administrative important actions that result in compliance, and we're hoping to steadily increase the target there. A major area of work for us would be compliance and enforcement strategy for the Environmental Management Inspectorate that we want to develop next year and also implement going forward. Chair, you were talking about the future vision, and part of that is to actually look at the strategy and where we're going to be going to, and that will help address the vision for the compliance and enforcement units specifically. The next line deals with a number of criminal investigations finalized and dockets handed over to prosecution. They obviously, we have certain challenges in relation to the fact that it's not only our work, but we have to involve other stakeholders, SACs and the Department of Justice, which tends to retard some of the work that's being done. Another big area of work which my biodiversity and conservation colleagues can talk to if there's a need is the number of interventions implemented for the safety and security of wildlife, including the rhinoceros populations in South Africa. Also, a relatively new area of work for us would be the number of compliance monitoring inspections for the threatened and protected species, and also site use that we're going to be looking at in terms of our targets for 2013-14, as well as 2017 and 18, or up to 2017 and 18. Then also another big area of work would be the number of tools for the mitigation of negative impacts of developments that we're going to be developing and implementing over the next couple of years. And essentially that's my input, Chair. The sort of standards I'll deal with once we get to that aspect. Thank you. Chair, I was expecting that comment, but you wanted to start from the beginning and indicate all the areas of work. We work on a matrix system, and I can indicate all our areas of work.
I'll grab you on your budget.
Good morning, Chair and honourable members. I will be talking on oceans and coasts. And the first indicator is ocean management regime developed, and target for the next year is an ocean management white paper approved. The second indicator, the number of strategies and plans for management of ocean and coastal environments developed and implemented. Here we're looking at Southern Oceans and Sub-Antarctic Island management strategy approved, and we're also looking at 9 of 25 oil pollution emergency response plans updated. Continuing with that indicator, Chair, we have a framework for the National Ocean and Coastal Special Plan submitted to management for consideration, and we also are looking at the National Coastal Management Program developed. Coastal Management Program is simply a bundle of priorities of provinces as well as national. We are looking at having 5 additional plans, estuary management plans developed, as well as 1 species management plan and 1 in draft in place. The next indicator is the number of national plans of action that are provision MPO instead of National Plan of Action initiative implemented. For next year, we're looking at coastal wastewater management policy being developed, and the other indicator is the percentage of coastline under marine protected areas, MPA less than for marine protected areas with partial or full protection. We're looking at partial protection being 13.5% of the coastline, and we're looking at fully protected areas in 9%.
Now that's a good example. When you guys come and present the budget, like you say, 45 estuary plans finalized. Now, problem is, I don't know, 45 or how many. I mean, are we going to have one day have 1,000? So that helps the process if one's understanding. So you guys must make sure when you come for the budget that that information is available. Even if it's on this document, just in brackets, you know, how many you expect there to be ultimate. Because otherwise this becomes a little bit meaningless in terms of trying to evaluate it. Because you don't know how many. Maybe 45 is all of them. Well, then it's a good, but maybe it's only half of them. Okay? I'm just giving you one example. There have been others as well previously, where we just need to make sure that when we give a figure like that, that we put it in some context that we can understand it.
Then share our percentage increase of total area of economic exclusion zone. That's what the EEZ stands for, economic exclusive zone. And here we're looking at a target of 2% of the offshore environment being protected. At the moment we've got less than 1%. Then we are looking at number of new voyages to remote stations. We undertake 3 voyages each year. One to Antarctica, another one to Marion, and another one to Cook Islands. Another indicator, Chair, is ocean and coastal research projects, surveys completed, and monitoring projects undertaken. And here we're looking at doing 2 surveys of representative habitats. We're looking at annual seabird population estimates for 12 species around South Africa and 1 in the Southern Oceans. We're looking to review the methods and results for assessing seal pups, trends, and seal movements, and we're looking at doing 1 coastal research project and as well as a monitoring one. Chair, we're looking at the number of observational platforms contributing to an ocean and coastal observation and network, and we're looking at having 4 observational platforms deployed and maintained during the next year. Number of ecosystem process studies undertaken, we're looking to do 2 ecosystem process studies next year. Thank you.
The other day when you gave the inputs on the green paper and on the bill, we look at the issue of monitoring. Now your monitoring station at St. Helena. Where is that target? I mean, do we have any plans as far as more monitoring of other parts of our oceans concerned? I'm not seeing if there's anything on your strategic plan yet. Or have I missed it?
Chair, those would be the observational platforms. That would do those measurements.
We actually haven't only got 1, but you say we've already got 4 this year, and we're going for 12.
No, 12, that is in 2017, 2018.
Yes, but we're going for that.
We're going for that, yes.
So, other than St. Helena, where are the others?
The others, there are 2 in KwaZulu-Natal,
mm-hmm.
1 in False Bay, and we also have atmospheric platforms, because as we were from the presentation last time, we also measured the wind speed.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got 2 in KwaZulu-Natal, 1 in Fort Bay, and 2 atmospheric platforms, 1 at Cape Columbine and another 1 in the peninsula.
We want to move that up to 12. So when you come and present that, that would want a presentation on to see where we want to expand, okay? And what your objectives are going there, where you want to go. When you come with a budget, okay? Just to get that clearer. So, okay, that is then, this are your monitoring observation platforms, this is monitoring. Also welcome, Minister. Thank you. Who's next, is it? Climate change, air quality.
Thank you. Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members and Honourable Minister. And thank you for this opportunity. I'll just take us briefly through Programme 4 on climate change and air quality management. I'll start with the targets and indicators in relation to climate change response, and then provide a short overview of the air quality management targets and indicators. We start in respect of adaptation, and of course, Honourable Members, Honourable Chair, you'll recall from the presentation last year that the National Climate Change Response Policy sets out quite clear deliverables under adaptation, mitigation and monitoring evaluation. And there are a set of additional deliverables that relate to, for example, finance, capacity building, etc. But here what we have focused on in the strategic plan is the adaptation, mitigation and monitoring evaluation. The first major performance indicator relates to long-term adaptation scenarios for South Africa. And in 2013-14, we are doing the research there in respect of a consensus set of scenarios, climate scenarios, as well as impact scenarios and the economic cost assessment and adaptation options in five sectors. And there you have the sectors. There's three human settlements sectors, that is urban, rural and coastal, as well as commercial, forestry, health and disaster management and risk reduction. By 2017, you see that there's a whole set of products there, including the finalized long-term climate scenarios, the impact scenarios, the adaptation options, the economic assessment, and the national climate change response adaptation strategy for South Africa. Moving on to climate change response policy interventions that will be implemented. Here we have three climate change response policy interventions. You moved on. I think we moved back by a slide. But the second indicator there relates to policy alignment. And here the key issue is the need to ensure that across different sectors, for example, water, agriculture and biodiversity, there is alignment of the policy framework to support adaptation and mitigation work. So here we would be focusing in the first year on water, agriculture and biodiversity in the adaptation context. In respect of the mitigation work, there's a set of mitigation plans that we need to be developing and also the mainstreaming in relation to specific mitigation sectors. Moving then onto a focus, zooming in onto the number of sector mitigation potential and analysis and impact studies here, Honourable Members, and Honourable Chair, you will recall that the work that we are doing is focusing on understanding and analysing the mitigation potential for five sectors. And the sectors that we're focusing there are energy, industry, agriculture, waste and transport. And the bottom line is that we really want to understand in a greater level of detail, building on the long-term mitigation scenarios of 2008, what indeed the mitigation potential is, what the big mitigation opportunities are, that's what the big emission reduction opportunities are, what the socioeconomic implications might be in respect of those mitigation implications, and then developing a draft national sense assessment and a 2050 pathways calculator. The 2050 pathways calculator is a user-friendly modeling system that enables one to play around with possible future emissions pathways. So if, for example, one wants to plug in pure renewable energy future for South Africa, the model then calculates what the employment implications are, what the costing implications are, what the land implications are. For example, we probably have to cover hectares of land with wind turbines, just by example. If we want to pure coal, if we want to mix, the model enables that kind of engagement. And we're quite excited about this. It's something that has been done in the UK and now it has been done by China. And we're working together with the UK and China on this 2050 pathways calculator. In respect of a climate change response policy intervention, here the key report will be a report on the initial desired emission reduction outcomes for five sectors. So once we've done the mitigation potential analysis, the outcome of that work will be the basis for negotiating, discussing and finalising what the emission reduction objectives will be per sector, as well as a report on the initial mix of policies and measures or instruments that are available within the South African context to, and within each of the sectoral contexts, to achieve those emission reduction objectives. And of course we will then be also listing greenhouse gases as a priority pollutant under the Air Quality Act, and the purpose of this is to enable us to require mitigation plans at a sector and sub-sectoral, and if necessary at an installation level. Moving on to the alignment issue here, I've already spoken about the guideline for mitigation plan and the mainstreaming of mitigation action in five sectors. The climate change response work, honourable members, you'll recall that we had that discussion last year. The target here is to ensure that we have, by the end of this year, a framework for implementation of three of the flagships, the waste management, the public works, and the adaptation research flagships. They're going into 2017-18. We also have a number of other sectors, waste management, energy efficiency, transport, renewable energy, and an accreditation system. And the plan here is that there would be a way of accrediting South Africa's big hitting adaptation and mitigation impacting flagship programs. It gives us national and international profile, and it also enables us to have a system of measuring the extent to which we're making progress towards mitigation and adaptation targets. On the clean and healthy air, there is the National Air Quality Indicator. This air quality indicator measures the PM10, which is particulate matter of a particular size, as well as sulfur dioxide concentrations, ambient air quality concentrations, and we are working towards an indicator as close to one as possible. Once it is one, we know that you have perfect air quality. At this stage, we are quite far away from that, and of course, it is a bit of a moving target as we improve the monitoring network. The air quality monitoring stations that are reporting to the South African Air Quality Information System is a performance indicator, and the target for 2013 is a total of 72 of these air quality monitoring stations, of which 68 are government owned. The air quality regulatory framework needs to be further enhanced, and the critical thing here is that the 2012 version of the national framework that we have been working on will be published and gazetted. On air quality management tools, here the South African Air Quality Information System Phase 2 needs to be finalised. The focus there is on the emissions inventory system. We need to have the two of the air quality priority areas under implementation, that's the Haarfelt and the Vaal, and then the Waterberg. Of course, we're currently in the process of doing the air quality threat assessment, as well as implementation plan and a draft vehicle emissions control strategy to be developed. Next slide. Honourable Chair, would you like me to continue with, all right, I will continue with the South African Weather Services. Here, the broad approach is that, the slides are disappearing very rapidly. Well, oh yeah, I think the boy is trying to hasten me. All right. I will just cover the strategic goals and objectives in this respect. Here is to ensure the continued relevance of SOARS as an organization in delivering meteorological and related products and services, to ensure the effective management of stakeholder partners and key client relations. There's a greater level of detail a little bit further down. But broadly, this is about the weather services strategic positioning in terms of delivering the necessary air quality and climate change information. To address the short-term viability and long-term sustainability of SOARS revenue and ensure continued fiscal discipline, this is really about growing and optimizing the public good revenue. Obviously, certain of SOARS services are public good services, and then other of these services are commercial services, and both the revenue streams need to be grown and optimized to ensure continuous organizational effectiveness and efficiency. I mean, that speaks for itself. Ensure the availability.
I don't think you need to go. This we can do when we get to the budget.
All right. Should I then just touch? Would you like to then, Honourable Chair, would you like to move straight on to the biodiversity or?
No, deal with the targets.
Okay, deal with the
targets. Give an idea of what the targets
are.
We have a feel for it.
Yes, just to get a feel for it. All right, so here, and strategic objective 1.1, which is organisational-wide compliance with all the applicable national and international regulatory frameworks. The critical issues here are an integrated marine business case to be developed, and this is to ensure that we have a linkage with the work under oceans and coasts in respect of research and infrastructure. Obviously, there's a very close relationship between meteorological work and the work that oceans and coasts are doing, particularly in respect of climate change issues. There is the regional telecommunications hub, and here what is required is that South Africa is part of a global network, and we are providing data for the African continent, and the regional telecommunications hub is the enabling instrument for that. On quarterly data availability, reports on national climate data, this is a part of the work that we are doing together with SOARS and talks to the South African Air Quality Information System. In terms of the number of disaster risk reduction applications implemented, here there has been one application developed and implemented for Southern Africa, and that is refining a severe weather warning system for South Africa. There is a tsunami early warning system that will be operational, and it's in 2013-14 this needs to be refined by testing receipt of warning messages by the Disaster Management Centre. Next slide. On the priority areas, the high flow priority area air quality stations will be transferred to SOARS. As per the project plan, this is the project plan of the South African Air Quality Information System, and in 2013-14, five of the high salt priority air quality stations will be operated, managed and maintained by SOARS, and the National Atmospheric Emissions Inventory will be tested and implemented nationally. Next slide. Scoping the development of SAPA Phase 3, once we finalise implementation of Phase 3 with Phase 2, which is the National Emissions Inventory, including the Greenhouse Gas Emissions Inventory, we'd be moving on to SAPA Phase 3, and that needs really to be conceptualised and scoped in 2013-14, and continuous monitoring and provision of trace gas data reports. trace gases being all the various gases, ozone, nitrogen oxide, sulfur dioxide, CO2 is included, methane, etc. These are the major gases that have implications for South Africa's air quality. The next one focuses on the requisite skills within the employee budget, and that talks to capacity and skills within schools and abilities absorbed by schools in critical strategic areas. Next slide. And that is it. Thank you, Honourable Members and Honourable Chair.
What is, often you guys write, what is at least 62% uptake of graduates in critical areas? And what does that mean? Does it mean that 62% of students that we paid bursaries for, we put them in those positions, or 62% of what? It's a bit difficult to understand.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Morning, Minister. I think in the at least 52% of the uptake is the students that we give bursaries to. Yes. Depending on whether we have enough funds to take all of them.
So if we had more funds, we can take all of them that we gave bursaries to. Okay, that I understand. Okay, five.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Minister, Honourable Members. I'm presenting Program 5, including the work of three public entities that align with this program. Isimangaliso, I'll highlight their indicators. Understand parts, I'll present their strategy map, issues of rainbow coaching there, and also flood disasters. Understandably, I will touch on their programs and their objectives. Coming to the work that we also do with provinces under Program 5, we want to continue to make sure there's land coverage under protected areas. They have an international target of 17. Each state party is expected to conserve its land surface of 17%. We are currently at 7.7% in South Africa. Our target for 2013-14, we want to increase by 0.05% to make 8.2, and then...
Has the international target got a deadline? Or is it just a target?
There's a 2020 deadline.
2020?
Yes. By 2018, we'll be standing at 10.2 percent. And also...
You are saying that 2 is important. You said that target and then how far we are. Because here's a prime example we're going to have to look at this.
What we did, Chair, as DG indicated earlier, we have developed what we call the Protected Areas Expansion Strategy. That talks to say how I'm going to move forward increasing the land. Each province has developed an expansion strategy. We also have ones for Sandbach and Isimangaliso, the entities under our control. Therefore, say that strategy is available to see how it takes us forward. Once we have the estate, we have developed a monitoring and tracking tool for effectiveness. Because when we did an assessment 2 years ago, we realized that the estate is not always in good hands. The score achieved by provinces in the last 2 years was at 49%. Now we want to continue to improve the management of the estate. Therefore, we would like to see 80% of all state managed protected areas with a MET score of 68%. Therefore, we want to push it from 49 up to 68%. We are making intervention to assist provinces because we understand where are the challenges, as we did an assessment. Under the indicator around legislation and to ensure protection of species and ecosystems, we would like to have regulations for the registration of professional hunters and hunting outfitters. Initially, we did what we call non-food standards. We realized that the industry is ignoring these non-food standards. Therefore, the legal opinion was say, put regulations in place so that we can be able to monitor the industry, how it's doing its business. We want to also have the non-food standards for translocation of large herbivores. There's a lot of movement of big animals in this country to different farms. There are also concerns around what can fit where, because some of them are called extralimital species. They cause a lot of harm in certain parts of the country because they are not indigenous there. Therefore, we want to have those norms and standards to make sure that the permitting processes and translocation of these animals, moving them around the country, there's a norm and standard on that. We have been amending our DOPS regulations because there were concerns around some of the provisions that we are working with industry to finalize those norms and standards. Under the same KPA, we want, in the last 4 years, we have developed norms and standards for species management plans. We have done that work. Hence now, you'll see people talk of rhino management plans, penguin management plans, Patagonia. Now we want to have those norms and standards now for ecosystems because they are provided for in the legislation. We want to start that process. There is a provision in the legislation for development of operational plans by provinces. They submit those to us. We want to review each one we receive because the operational plan assists provinces and local government to work together in a particular bioregion to deal with issues of threat to conservation. We also want to finalize regulations for the management of 34 dome. This has taken a long time because 99% of that welfare site is privately owned. At least we have managed to sign an MOU in the last year with the landowners. Therefore, we want to finalize those regulations and also establish an authority. Next slide. In Ramsar sites, people always say a wetland is a wetland. We have many wetlands this country that we're also trying to take care of. But we have those that are internationally recognized, called the Ramsar site. We want this year to continue producing more plants. Our focus for this year will be in the KZN area, especially Shimanyaniso. We want to be able to do the Selusia Lake, the Lake Shubaya, the Turtle of Tongaland, Kosi Bay, and the Ndumo Game Reserve. There are problems in Ndumo because there's land invasion.
Where is that?
It's in KZN, border in Mozambique. There are problems with Ndumo because there are issues of land invasion. But we don't want to stop, we want to have a plan. In the plan, we take care of those challenges that we experience currently. Also, under the KPA for the number of tools to prevent the introduction of alien invasive species, there's a slight change here, Chairperson, because we have now Dr. Preston leading a branch that deals with alien invasives. Because in our legislation, we are finalizing a national strategy for the control of invasive species in the country. Because although there are programs on the ground, we're lacking this national strategy that we want to develop. Moving forward, Dr. President will take over that work, look at that strategy, make sure the strategy implemented, there are programs on the ground which are aligned. The other one, we want to look at the system for the transformation of the biodiversity sector. We want to have a draft transformation framework that will be able to say how do we move forward transforming the boundary sector. This will be a busy area of honorable members because there are challenges in terms of how people interpret what is called transformation in the sector. Therefore, we want to have that framework that we will engage in the private sector and other government departments.
That's an odd target.
Yes.
I know you put targets for the sake of putting targets, but that's odd.
I mean, you want to draft the transformation framework in the next 2 years, but then by 2017 you only want to implement at least 20%. It's funny if we don't have the, to put a target already when we don't even know what the framework is. Maybe 100%, maybe.
If you look below, you will have other targets which are also to be supported and
changed. The other targets I can understand, but this one's funny, because it creates a framework for the transformation of the sector. And then, I mean, the sector is there already, a lot of it, and a lot of things already been done, and your target for 2 years later is only to implement 20%. What I'm saying is, this for me is putting a target for the sake of a target. I would rather just say it's implementation of the framework. But to put 20% is just like funny, it's like a ton circus.
Perhaps
maybe we've already, by the time we draft this, the sector will already have implemented more than 20, by the time we draft, because it exists at the moment, not a new sector. So then you say we implement.
So we're putting what we can monitor. Perhaps we can adjust to what we can
agree with. We look at 20% implementation. So this is like a target that just doesn't make sense, okay?
So we want also to look at issues of sustainable natural resources based project implemented. One project, because our approach here, we is look at this bioregional approach. One focus area for us for this year will be the bush language area. Because there are a lot of biodiversity issues here, alien invasive issues, there are poverty issues, there are issues of agriculture, there are issues of land rates. There's a concern around the conservation of the catchment. Therefore, we want to make sure that we focus on that area, make interventions that can look at socio-economic development while are also addressing issues of biodiversity conservation. And on Sunday, my emphasis will be more on their programs. Go to that slide. Next slide. Next. I'm looking at what I have here. It's not there. Okay, so let me talk to what I have in front of me. In summary,
there's no funding and so on. Where are the targets?
Chair, I will ask Mary to help me with that one. Help the one who's
got that. Yeah. No use asking her. I mean, I just go through this page as quickly as about the budget. This comes later, we're not discussing the budget.
Yeah, you have a document which outlines the high level indicators.
I wanted to talk to you.
Yes,
talk. The programs.
Yes.
They have six programs in Sunday. There's one program to manage and unlock benefits of the network of botanical gardens. They have a network of gardens. They need to unlock the potential of those gardens in terms of awareness, in terms of emphasis, in terms of managing some of the infrastructure in the gardens. That's program one. They have another program that looks at providing science-based evidence to support the policy and decision making. As the Biodiversity Institute, they need to supply evidence-based science to inform policies that deal with biodiversity. Even ourselves, in developing our policies, they need to provide us with that type of science that we need. Under Program 3, they need to coordinate and provide access to biodiversity information and scientific knowledge. They have what we call a network model, where they collect information, they analyze the information, they need to provide that, give access to that information so that that scientific knowledge is known to assist with biodiversity conservation moving forward. Also provide science-based policy tools and advice linked to the program 2 and 3 are the close linkage between the two of them. But they need to provide at the same time provide science-based policy tools. There's a mix of things there. Under Program 5, they need to drive human capital development because is linked to transformation of the sector, building human capital of the sector. For example, there's a lack of black scientists in the sector. They need to look at that area properly. They also do render effective and efficient corporate services for families. There was an internal process that they must, they need to look at. Maybe share later, I can talk to other issues that are on those lines. I'm just highlighting the purpose of the six programs by Sunday.
Just to add, Chair, I think what we have there is the indicators up to, or the targets for by 2018. So for each of the programs, they have then those high-level targets. But they are just not on the table format.
Look, it's fine. I mean, you just make sure that we come to the budget hearings that we have it in a different format again. Okay, go ahead. Next one.
Sir, I will talk
to look at these inputs, it seems that there has been some misunderstandings, because clearly these are more the inputs that should be given by the budgeters, because it's budgets and all their plans and so on. We're just trying to get behind the thinking around performance targets and indicators, which clearly we've done for the department, but it's not yet, unless there is a slide that deals with it.
After the pictures, you have the strategy map. So after, you have it in the drawdown. It says there's the target to serve. You see, so this is the strategy there.
There's like a
couple of slides that have the objective targets, indicators.
In terms of the strategy map of Sandbox, they have been implementing the scorecards, which is a good tool, especially to monitor performance and also to improve reporting. You can see their mandate is clear, is to deliver of conservation mandate through managing the system of national parks and also reporting of the state of parks. Other finances, because they need to achieve long-term financial sustainability, they want to promote effective budgeting management and continue to grow their revenue. But I was expected to do that.
Please. This is not stuff that's on our growing revenue. And, I mean, we know that.
Okay.
So, Chair, we then go to the, let me just explain why I'm presenting. Part of our governance structure is you have the DR representative on the board to represent the DG on the board. And to look after the interests of the state. And in the case of Sandbox, I am that member. So that's why I'll be talking to the
indicators. We can play something.
And Julie is for Source, and Fundi is for Isamungaliso and Sandy. So if we look at the first strategic objective, that is effective budget management, and there we have the budget variance, and the issue is to break even in terms of allocation as well as income and expenses. For the revenue, the target
they're
is...
more daring than you. You only want to spend 98%, they want to spend all their money.
They have land to purchase. Then we have the growing the revenue and in terms of the baseline, which they want to maintain, and then increase to 8% their revenue. Going to the organizational reputation, then we're looking at the media reputation rating, which is based on how many times are you in the media, what is the tonality, of the media coverage, as well as whether it is your own voice, whether it's your own presentation, what other people are talking about, and then works out an indicator. Then growing social support and providing access and benefit sharing. There we're talking about the environmental education program of the park, and the benefits are there in terms of the number of the beneficiaries of that program is indicated there, as well as the growth of it. Customer focus, responsible tourism. I think there the issue that you've targeted in our last engagement chair is there specifically in terms of increasing the number of domestic black visitors. And you can see there in terms of what the projected or the targeted growth in that area is. Corporate governance, we use the same measure of an unqualified audit as the national department. If we then go into...
Also, I mean, you know, one of the discussions we had is not, I mean, obviously it's important to have generally black domestic visitors now, what special measures we are to take. But the important thing is the people around the parks. I mean, we don't have any indication yet that the locals are actually the ones that... Because they're the ones that are the easiest to give special packages and platforms. People that live close by, you know, that you can allow them to come in on a Wednesday for free or whatever, so that you attract more of the local people to make the parks. Now, I mean, that's the kind of thing that doesn't get captured under these broad categories. It is local participation, you know, local participation.
Okay, I'm going to ask Dr. Mahuna to just add on that. We have some of the targets in terms of the socioeconomic development where we talk about involving them in the commercial activities in the park, but in terms of visiting the park, Dr. Mabunda, if you could just...
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, it's happening through structured programs like National Parks Week, where for the whole week in a year we do get local visitors to come in, but also there are three open weekends at park level, really regional, not necessarily at
that's fine. I'm sure you guys are doing it. I'm saying you're not reflecting in your targets, and we can't measure it. So if we don't have specific targets around it, we can't measure it. That's the point. So I think you guys should give some thought to that. I mean, this is this is a big plus for Sandparks and for Isis Mangalisa, or it can be a big plus. How you involve and attract economically and in terms of tourism, your local people and what projects you have. But then you have to have, I accept all the things you're saying, Doctor. But that's going to be for the budget when you explain that part. So when it comes to targets, we need to find a way how we're measuring whether we're being able to grow that. Now those targets are not here for me. I think that's the issue, okay? Give some thought to it before you finalize your strategy then, okay? Because I think that's the way one can then really see. I mean, yeah, it's under broad categories now. We're going to have to wait for your inputs to see it. We're not going to be able to measure it at the end of the year because they won't be figured. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I think it could be a subset of that 4-2-3 in terms of facilitated visitors. In terms of then looking at the big part of the mandate in terms of the management of the conservation estate, we have the biodiversity monitoring plan, and there you would see that we currently have 95% achievement of exactly what it is that we want to monitor and improve, and that target moves to 100% for 2013 and 14. In terms of the park management plans, that number, that target relates actually to the time frame applicable in the act of the current management plan. So what is targeted for next year is the time frame for which the current plans come to an end and a new revised plan needs to be tabled. So that's what informed those. And then also in terms of the cultural heritage program, you see that we're moving to 100% target of adhering to that. In terms of the areas added to national parks, that is of course included in the national target, which is linked to the international target, as you've mentioned, Chair. You would see the change that we've made in the department's plan is to also reflect the hectares and not only the percentage of land under coverage, so that you can see what the different contributors are. National Parks added that a number of hectares to the hectares target. Then the areas in terms of the alien and invasive species is linked to the work of environmental programs, which Dr. Preston will be presenting later. And again, this hectareage is included in the total target that will be presented there. Then you see in terms of the rhino poaching, here we're talking specifically in terms of the park, and where the target is to keep it below the birth rate in order to make sure that the population continue to grow. The person there, in terms of the next facilitating socioeconomic development, all of these areas of work here is worked into the targets that will also be presented by Dr. Preston. So you can see here what the contribution of work in Sandpark managed area is to our total target in terms of job creation. And apart from the last one, which is the community-based socioeconomic initiative implemented, and there is the maintenance of the current baseline and increasing annually to 12 in the after years. In terms of promoting research and development, that is the research project in terms of the area that has been identified in the overall research and development program as essential and important categories to have further research on, and it is the implementation against those identified areas of research to be included in Sandpark's areas of work. Then the last area deals with human capital management, and that is the standard in terms of thinking, both in terms of management, where the target is still a little bit below what the national target of 50% for women is, but of course we need to wait for the natural processes in order to correct that, to have 50% women management in Sandpark. And then you have the rest of the target set.
These are most important targets not yet.
Which is
true. You couldn't accommodate us in Mapungubwe the other day. So that target at the moment is not. I hope that that target goes up to 100%.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're just talking about Mapungubwe. We just want to show you what the recent floods did. Very brief, two slides. In terms of the damage that we've incurred in Kruger and in Mapungubwe related to the 18th to 21st January floods. In terms of Kruger, you see there that is rainfall more than that area received in a year, which was received in a couple of hours. And then you will see the impact where there is some of the bush camps. There was also some radio reports this morning about the total damage that was in the Kruger. We've lost 29 tar roads and also gravel roads, we've lost bridges. There is some of the bush camps that have been totally damaged and will not be operational for quite some time. And then you see that the structural damage alone is 120 million in Kruger, and it excludes the loss of revenue as a result of closing camps due to structural damage. And you see also what
that's
we have
one way of saying to me that target can't be answered.
And then also in terms of the staff members, the same in terms of Mapungubwe. Luckily there we didn't have as much infrastructural damage as we had in Kruger, but still for a very small park which Mapungubwe is, we had quite substantial impact in our ability to accommodate tourists in the short term.
This is Mangalisa. Carlos.
Thank you, Chair. Let me attend. This is Mangalisa. Next slide.
All right, Carlos. Oh, yeah. Last page. Last page.
Carlos.
Yeah.
Chair, in terms of ensuring the conservation of the values of the welfare effect, their target to detect ocean incidents, it is an indicator, Also, there's an issue around illegal developments that we want to detect. And also, to respond to EIA's reported by third parties in terms of development. They also want to optimize empowerment in all activities in the park to improve livelihoods, especially of the claimant communities there. They want to create temporary jobs, direct and indirect, new permanent jobs, direct and indirect from the park-related activities, and also increase number of BE SMEs ownership at 40% or more through their programs, and also looking at BE procurement as a percentage of qualifying expenditure. In terms of optimizing revenue, indeed they want to increase revenue there. They have baselines and audit targets in the outer years. They want to increase visitor numbers. And also in terms of governance, they want to achieve adequate
governance. Are there no targets for acquiring further land? Or is it all sorted out?
Chair Andrew can respond, but because if not 100%, 99% of that land is under claims. Therefore, it's already a footprint that they are trying to manage. At the same time, there are parcels of land, like they want to link with KZN and wildlife. I would like them to add on that one and do more relationship with the wildlife.
Honourable Chair, Minister, these are high-level targets for talk-town land base. Below this, we have annual plans of operation, which go into much more detail, and that's where land incorporation expansion would be incorporated. GDG Fundacilia hasn't captured it. There are some strategic, but small, strategic, there's small pieces of land, but highly strategic, highly conservation, valuable lands of our size and of the quality that we're in the process of working on. There are targets around that, but that's an annual plan of operation. This forces the mandate.
It's important that we have to reach that 70%, that these are all there, okay? All right, now look, this, you see, this is what we've been trying to do now, shift the focus. That when it comes to conservation and program 5, that we look at the same time, we look at the entities involved with that. In the past, we've done it separately, which gives you a fragmented picture. So in future, from this budget now, as we, this is what we're trying to do, when we get to the budget hearings now, when program 5 comes, we'll probably set aside one day for program 5 plus the 3 entities, okay? And then with the same with climate change, we will take swords to go with them so that we get the integrated pictures, what we've not done in the past, which we're trying to do now. So bear in mind when you're preparing your inputs and so on, to try and make sure that you meet with your entity so that that holistic picture comes out. Okay. Of course, the rest of the department will do, you know, what's the budget and so on, so on. We'll do it separately. These two will probably fit in at the end of the line. Okay, that is program 5. Alright, coffee's outside, I'm told, which is usually tells me that we stop. It's almost quarter to dark. Okay, can we have a quick, can you just grab a cup of coffee and let's come back and we continue, okay? I think we're going well. And we're getting that picture and so on. So let's grab a cup of coffee and then come back, please.
About 3 more weeks.
Alright.
So about 6 weeks in total.
Are you sort of a postgraduate?
Yeah, so I'm taking a year off and just kind of traveling and doing some different things.
And you're from where?
New York.
Alright, I was in
New York. Oh really? In the city?
Yes, Manhattan.
Very nice. Doing what?
Gee, at the time I was working, I did various things, a lot of stuff in affordable housing.
Okay.
The second half of the last 5 years I was working particular organisation. So housing policy work, rather than lobbying politicians,
working
with
the community.
And you studied
where? St. Lawrence University. I'm in the Army.
Oh, in St. Lawrence County.
Yeah.
Way up there. Well,
yeah, it's right next to me. It's a little liberal arts school.
Yeah. But that's not where you come from.
No, I live in the city.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No. We were in, for a number of years, we were in the last 70s,
I think. Okay. Yeah, we're a midtown, 60s in New York.
Okay, way up. Not quite way up, but
yeah.
Well, way out here. About as east as you can get before the,
the river.
East River.
Yeah.